We're going.
We're going.
Now we're going.
All right. Hello, y'all. Welcome to Brain Sick, which is a podcast about pretty sick brains. We talk about mental illness.
Mm-hmm. Very sick brains.
Very sick. The sickest. And today, I'm going to be talking about...
Well, who are you first?
Oh, yes. That'd be good for y'all to know. I'm Alita.
I'm Lydia.
I am Andrew.
Welcome back.
Welcome.
Or welcome, if this is your first time.
Whether you're a returning guest or not, you're welcome to our space.
Yes.
Hello. It's a pleasure having you here. Today, I'm going to be talking about Dear Evan Hansen.
But before we really get into it, I want to do some housekeeping, as we're going to steal that term. Okay.
Please do.
So, last episode about our Beach Boy, I listened to it back, and we mentioned that he played in a gay bar, and I feel like it might have come off wrong. I don't fully know how to explain it, but just wanted to clarify, nothing against that. We are very open-minded. Just
an anomaly that he wasn't gay.
But
he
right.
Was
yes.
That is
if
all.
That was any, yeah.
We found humor in that aspect of the situation.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
So that is out of the way. Something else I wanted to mention was that for negative symptoms in schizophrenia, they're usually harder to treat than the positive ones. Hmm. I don't know if that was... I just remembered that earlier today. So put that out there too. And I'm thinking about in the future covering just a general overview of mental illnesses. So we're all on the same page, kind of have some background, but we'll see. We'll see.
I like that idea.
Yeah. Also, the title of that episode we're going to call Crazy Equals Genius. I just wanted Alita to explain that.
So, Crazy Equals Genius is the title of a song from Panic at the Disco's album Death of a Bachelor.
Woo.
And if you listen to the lyrics, particularly the pre-chorus section, he mentions both Mike Love and Brian Wilson.
Mm.
Like, the lyrics are like, you're just like Mike Love, but you want to be Brian Wilson. And so it's like, I know it's a funny little...
exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly... just couldn't have hit the nail more on the head. So, I was thinking about that as Andrew was talking, and I was like,
it's perfect.
Good.
And one more thing, I called it multiple personality disorder, and that's what it used to be called, but updated DSM, they call it dissociative identity disorder. Mm. Just want to correct myself on that.
DID.
Yeah. So with that,
let's get things rolling.
Get into it.
Perfect. Okay, so, as I've mentioned every episode leading up to this, I'm going to be talking about Dear Evan Hansen, which is a Broadway musical.
Not a real person.
He is not. Evan Hansen is a fictional character. All of the people described in this musical are fictional. But as I'm going to talk about, the writers based it upon an event that happened to one of them in high school. And so my sources are Wikipedia, our favorite, Washington Post, and themighty.com.
Hmm.
Yes. So, a little bit of...
And you saw this.
I did see this, yes. Mm-hmm. I went to New York with my choir, a little while ago, back in February of 2019. And I went to see it on... I think it was at the Music Box Theater, which is where it premiered originally on Broadway, which is pretty cool. And it was fantastic. I cried. I loved it. I had a friend who had seen it already when they did the touring show in San Francisco, and she was, like, obsessed with it.
See, I've never heard of it before, so it was really cool to hear you explain it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm excited to hear about it in more detail, because...
Yeah. One thing that was really cool about the cast that I saw was that the main character, Evan Hansen, was played by... let me find his name.
Andrew!
Correct! So, Evan was played by Andrew Barth Feldman, which is extraordinary, and he did such an amazing job. But, get this, He is only 16 years old.
Oh, that's right. You told me.
And this is his Broadway debut.
That's nice. Wild.
Yes, that is just extraordinary. You might not, like, even if you're not well acquainted with Broadway, not that I'm particularly well acquainted,
more
but,
than either of us, you know, unfortunately.
I've seen a couple shows. Thank you. Just got a little more tea. It's pretty extraordinary that he is playing the main role, like the lead role, on a Broadway production at the age of only 16 years old. But if you take into consideration that originally Evan was played by a 25-year-old man, like the just a decade of difference, it's really extraordinary. And his stage presence and his voice, his vocals, like they're all really great. Yeah. But yes, going into the background, it is a stage musical, which is a fancy term that just refers to musicals. That's like what we've been calling them since the early 20th century.
All right.
The music and lyrics were written by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul. So I mentioned before, it opened on Broadway at the Music Box Theater in December of 2016.
Oh, so it's pretty new.
It's very new. Mm. And it's original. It's like, they just wrote it from scratch.
Yes. Because I had that thought.
It's like mostly adaptations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, yeah, pretty much.
Yes. That's another thing that has garnered interest and attention from people, and also a bit of apprehension because of how it's not based upon anything. It was just these two writers, kind of like brainchild.
Yeah.
But yes, it. Okay, wait. Let me make you're a correction. Good. Yeah. Sorry, I'm a little nervous, but
you're doing great.
Yes, originally it. The world premiere was at the Arena Stage in Washington, D.C. in July 2015.
Whoa.
So
is that Broadway? What is Broadway?
So Broadway is...
Specific to New York?
Yeah, not the most well-versed. So there's Broadway Street, and there's not just, like, one theater. There's multiple theaters
on
Broadway.
I thought this was just one theater, like, until just now. I thought it was just, like, the Broadway Theater.
Me too.
That's where they did all this stuff.
That's what I thought, too, because... Like, I didn't know until I was there, and I was like, this isn't called Broadway. I was like, this isn't the Broadway Theater. What is this?
Californians have no concept of the East Coast.
We're chilling with our 70-degree weather today.
It's ridiculous. I hate it. Mm-hmm. I was sweating.
But, yes.
I'm still sweating.
From my understanding, Broadway is more of, like, a collection of actors and casts and like productions that is spread out amongst these various theaters.
I see.
Yeah. So yeah, it originally premiered in Washington, D.C., and then there was an off-Broadway production at Second Stage Theater from March to May of 2016, and then it premiered on Broadway in December 2016. So it didn't go straight to Broadway. I'm actually not sure how typical the process is for that, but I feel like in my head that makes sense because Broadway's like the big leagues, you know, to go straight
to tryouts.
Yeah, you gotta like test the waters and everything. And something that I really enjoyed about it when I went to go see it, and I think is pretty refreshing, is that it has a very unique stage setup. So it's very much a modern, like it takes place in this day and age, is meant to be relatable to the struggles of kids, teenagers growing up during this time, and people who encounter them. And so something that they emphasized throughout the play was like the use of technology and social media. So you see Twitter and Instagram, Facebook, email being projected onto these panels. Like there's a fair amount of panels just around the stage.
That's really cool.
So was it like the name brand social medias, or were they like Farcebook.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
From what I remember, it was a mixture.
Okay.
So, like, I think probably they got approval from some of them and not from others.
Yeah.
Got it.
If you've also seen the newest Wreck-It Ralph, Ralph Breaks the Internet.
No.
It's like the same thing, though. They like, some of them it's like, oh, Facebook, and other ones it's like very clearly it's like Insta pic.
Yeah.
Is it like Twitter? Like,
I was gonna say something, but I forgot. Okay, please go on.
But I'll, I thought that was really interesting.
Oh, I was going to ask if you could.
Yes.
I got it.
That's all good.
Were you able to read what it said on the panels?
Yes. So where I was sitting in the theater, I was sitting a bit more to the right. So it was harder. It's definitely like formatted so that like the center gets the best view, the best head-on shot. And so I wasn't able to read as much of it because they were projecting it onto multiple panels like at the same time, or projecting multiple things at the same time. Like they could project like a Twitter news feed while also projecting like an email inbox on the other side. I'm gesturing with my hands, which our listeners will not be able to see.
That's okay.
And so it definitely was a bit difficult, but you could still make out things, and it wasn't it was more to add. It didn't bring information that wasn't already there. Yes. Okay, so at the 71st Tony Awards, which is like the Broadway equivalent the of the Oscars or Grammys for the Broadway scene, it was nominated for 9 awards, and it won 6 of them.
Wow.
Pretty extraordinary. And it won Best Musical, Best Score, Best Actor in a Musical for Ben Platt, who was the original Evan Hansen, Best Featured Actress in a Musical for Rachel Bay Jones, who plays Evan's mother, Heidi Hansen, and then also for Best Book of a Musical and Best Orchestrations.
So did they make a book?
Yes, they made a book adaptation from the play. And a film adaptation is currently in the works as well. Yes, which is kind of goes to show that it's garnered a fair amount of critical acclaim in just the few years that it's been out in the world doing its thing. But yeah, that's some background about the play itself. And then I wanted to go into background behind Benj Pasek and Justin Paul,
the writers.
Yes, I will refer to them as Pasek and Paul from now on.
Okay.
Yeah, just for ease of talking. So this wasn't their first,
time to the rodeo.
Time at the rodeo.
Is that how it goes?
Yeah.
Not first rodeo. It wasn't their first rodeo.
Okay.
You know, in 2012 they had a musical, which was an adaptation of an early 90s film called Dogfight.
Oh, okay.
Do you know that?
No.
Oh.
Yes, I'm also not familiar.
Okay.
Sounds kind of niche, but... which opened at Off-Broadway's Second Stage Theater, which is also where Dear Evan Hansen went to before going on Broadway. So Off-Broadway is just, like, a musical. Like, I want to say it's just...
Is it just next to...
I honestly don't know.
It's like the back alley.
Yeah.
Yeah, Broadway.
How often are they making musicals these days? Because I'd imagine Broadway's kind of struggling with Netflix and crap.
But I almost feel like it's... I always, whenever I see that actors have been in Broadway shows, my respect and kind of admiration goes way up. So I feel like Broadway's for the elite, almost.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Push. Because, I mean, you have to have every single talent.
You have to be able to
act live
and be expressive. Yes,
it's usually, you have to sing. I was going to say usually, but...
It's pretty... I mean,
that's pretty much the definition.
There must be Broadway shows where you don't sing.
True.
I'm not, well...
I don't know. Yeah. Okay, I should have gone with my gut.
No, it's okay. I mean, we're well acquainted with the musicals.
Yeah.
Because that's what you think of when you think of Broadway. You think of the big show, you like, woo-woo.
Like, just like that.
Catch me on Broadway, guys.
Just like that.
Yeah. 16 quaking. But no, yeah, I think, what do you like, making new musicals or just like,
just yeah, how often do they come out? Yeah. New? Or is it like a season? Just curious.
Yeah, no, for sure. I don't know super well. It's interesting because you get a mixture of more of, like, the classics and then newer ones, like Dear Evan Hansen or, like, Waitress, which I also went to see, Fantastic, which premiered, I want to say, in 2014, or around then. And so you have classics. You have Wicked, which
Phantom
is...
Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom of the Opera. I almost said Carmen. That's just not correct. Like
an opera.
An opera. Yes, but...
There's Hamilton. That's kind of newer.
Yeah, it's newer. Yeah. So if you look at the ones that have really been prominent as of the past 7 years. I mean, there's been a few, right? Hamilton, Waitress, and Dear Evan Hansen are the big ones that I can think of.
Okay.
Sure, so there are others.
Like, yeah, there are probably more out there. Mm. And those are all within, like, a couple of years of each other. Mm. So I think we can roughly say that, like, as of late, that's been the timing of things. But yes, Pasek and Paul, they were working together. They also had their songs featured in an adaptation of A Christmas Story.
Is that the kid with the BB gun? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I always get it mixed up with A Christmas Carol. That's Charles Dixon. Ooh. I got excited. And Freudian slip. Okay. Just forget that happened.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Anyway, yes, that one. The you'll shoot your eye out, tongue yes. stuck to the pole.
Fragile.
Fragile. Oh, yeah. The leg lamp. So many iconic moments.
Really?
They got a Tony nomination for best score for that as well. So they are kind of building up and doing things. And as they're doing these adaptations, Pasek and Paul are like, you know what? You know what would be really cool? If we made our own show, just not an adaptation, just do our own thing. And so, the inspiration for it came from a traumatic event that happened in Pasek's life as a high school student in the Philadelphia suburbs. And so, what had happened was a student in his high school had died. A student in his high school died. And it says that Pasek had been struck not only by the outpouring of tributes, but also by the number of people who wanted to claim the student as their dearest friend.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of in the wake of this tragedy, how so many people were coming forward and proclaiming their sorrows at the passing away of this fellow classmate. And so, the musical takes an adaptation of that, and... So Evan Hansen, he's put into a similar situation. Like, he's one of those students that claims to be close to a fellow classmate that has passed away.
Mm.
And then it kind of shows the consequences of that choice that he's made.
Mm.
So going into that...
Yeah, good segue.
Yes, we're going to talk about the plot. If you don't want spoilers, just leave. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm basically going to explain the whole plot. Yeah.
Just go to Broadway first.
Fly over wherever, yeah. wherever you are.
Go check it out.
Then come back.
Come back. Put us on pause for however long that takes. Listen to us on your flight back home.
Yeah. Good. Yes. Good job for doing that. I never even thought about it.
So yes, little spoiler alert. Now, spoilers galore. So, Evan Hansen, he is a high school senior, and he has social anxiety, and he doesn't really have any friends. So... like, one of the first songs in the musical, Waving Through a Window, they're the lyrics, on the outside, always looking in, and this is from Evan's perspective, will I ever be more than I've always been? Because I'm tap, tap, tapping on the glass, I'm waving through a window. So that's him commenting on how he feels like he's, and also because of the social media presence, the window is, like, looking at other people's social media feeds, seeing other people posting about their friendships, their lives, how exciting and
that's a real
fun
thing.
They're doing. Yeah, like FOMO and, I don't know, just social media presence. I think from the studies that have been done.
Leads to depression.
Yeah, can be linked.
Right, linked. Yeah, there's the causation. Correlation thing.
Yeah, and sure. Because it's, you know.
But there's been studies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's just like the undeniable like, oh, what do you want to call it? Comparison culture around it.
Definitely.
That's just so, and it's like inescapable.
It's so prevalent.
And if you don't participate, then you
feel left out almost in the most extreme degree because you're not even part of being left out.
Yeah.
You know, like.
I got so peer pressured into getting a Facebook.
Yeah.
Which was fine. It wasn't.
It was less of a thing back
then. It really was.
Everything's really integrated now, too. So it's as soon as you take one little dip into the pool.
Yeah, you're in.
Your deep dive.
Definitely.
And
people think something's wrong if you leave. Like, if you disconnect.
Yeah. There is a good little sketch in Portlandia about that. She just deletes all her accounts. And then Fred's like, who are you? Wait, do I know you? I was like, it's me, Carrie. We've been friends for years. She's like, I can't find you. She's like, no. That's a good sketch.
Oh, lovely. But yes, so he's like dealing with this anxiety and these feelings of isolation and loneliness, and seeing other people's social media presence is only making it worse. And so he goes to see a therapist, and his therapist recommends that he writes letters to himself, mm-hmm. which is hence like the title of the play, yeah. Dear Evan Hansen. And so, like, in the first number, does anybody have a map? His mother is saying, like, hey, have you been writing those letters to yourself? Dear Evan Hansen, this is going to be a good day, and here's why. And he's like, yeah, like, I started one. She's like, oh, I'm proud of you. But they're not really connecting. So there's also that disconnect between him and his mother. Mm. She's a working mom. She's working during the day and then going to school at night.
Is his dad not in the picture?
Okay. They divorced, and his father left when he was quite young, like maybe 4 or 5.
I see.
Yeah, and so she's a single mother just working to put food on the table for them.
Yeah.
And so... he also has a cast because he broke his arm over the summer. And so she's like, you can go around and ask the kids at the first day of school to go and sign your cast. Make some friends that way. So when Evan gets to school, he bumps into Connor Murphy, who is another troubled youth. His family is getting on his ass about doing the drugs, smoking the weed, and just being kind of like, he's not very diligent in his studies.
So, I'm interrupting.
Go.
I don't know if you already said, what grade are they in?
They are seniors in high school.
Okay.
Yes, so 12th grade. Their last year.
It's always fun.
Yes.
That's where you are right now.
It's where I am. And so, I also understand the feelings brought up about worries about college and the future, anxiety and all that. But Evan bumps into Connor Murphy, who is just another kind of socially isolated person. He doesn't have any friends either. And he seems to have this darkness inside of him. And he signs Evan's cast. He's just, like, he kind of, like, bumps into him. And he's like, ugh, whatever. I'm going to write my name really big on your cast. It's like, everyone knows that I was here.
He didn't draw penis.
Luckily not. I think Evan might have been like, please, just not a phallic object. Connor, in huge letters.
Yeah.
So, through that, he has his name on his arm, and Evan is also finishing up his letter at the school library. He prints it out, and Connor grabs it because he's kind of an asshole, and he's like, oh, what's this? He like grabs his assignment and looks at it, and he spirals a bit because he sees that something that Evan wrote in his letter like related to Connor's sister Zoe, who Connor has a bit of a crush on. Yeah, so he wrote some things about how great Zoe is and how he feels like.
Wait,
she's,
to his sister?
To Connor's sister.
The one who wrote his name really big on Evan's cast.
Okay.
Yes. So Connor is the other.
I just thought I heard you say that Connor had a crush on his sister.
No.
Let me clarify then. Evan has a crush on Connor's younger sister, Zoe.
That
who's like
adds
the
up.
Grade below. Yeah. Yes.
Really gotta clarify.
You know, it's funny, they joke about that like throughout the play.
God.
Like when they're writing the fake emails later, his like family friend is like, my sister's hot, and then he's like, no, like delete it. But anyway, he picks up the letter and he sees that he's written some things about Zoe, and it really upsets him. Mm-hmm. And so Connor runs away and he's holding on to the letter.
Mm-hmm.
And Evan is distraught because he's like, I need that to show my therapist that I did my assignment. A couple days go by. He hasn't seen Connor around school. And news gets out that Connor has committed suicide. And so... that's what also leads to this outpouring of social media posts, people talking about how tragic this loss is and how sad they are to see their classmate go. When in reality, no one was truly friends with Connor. He was isolated. He was lonely.
Which probably helped lead to...
to him taking his own life. And, yeah. And so, Evan is called into the principal's office, and basically because of the letter and because of the huge letters written on his cast, which say Connor, he becomes affiliated with Connor Murphy. Mm-hmm. And he goes over to the Murphy household. And when he does, he tries to clarify to them that he didn't know Connor. He wasn't really friends with him. But they're all mourning. It's Connor's mom, his dad, and his sister Zoe. And so the mom is especially distraught and very much grieving.
Yeah.
And so when he goes over there, as he's trying to clarify, but words are failing him because he's just not the best at talking to people.
Sure, I mean, he has that social anxiety, right?
Exactly, he has that social anxiety. Mm. He kind of just starts going along with it and saying, like, sure. Yeah, I was Connor's best friend. We hung out all the time, like, we knew each other. And so he pretends that he was Connor's friend to kind of, like, help them through their grief.
Like, I can totally see someone thinking, oh, I would never do that. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, put in that position, it'd be really easy to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you're with a family who's really just had this huge shock and lost their son, their brother.
Yeah, well, then, like, you know the kid, and, like, then you have that interaction with him, like, a couple days before. Yeah. So you start to, like, ask yourself, like, how much of a role did you have in that person's life? Like, legitimately, not just getting pushed into it.
Yeah.
And then, like, you can, you know, yeah, you can share the burden with them, like, the mourning.
Right.
Definitely. Yeah, it was, yeah, it seems as though it stemmed from Connor's, like, he didn't want to put them in any more grief than they were already in. And also,
Evan.
Pardon, Evan, yes, okay. Evan. Our main character, Evan. I'm so sorry. Yes.
You're good.
Evan didn't want to put Connor's family through any more grief.
Right.
And
it kind of maybe gave them something to hold on to through definitely. All this.
Yes. And so, also, my interpretation is that it's also a bit of his desire, his selfish need for human connection.
Sure.
So, because Evan does come from a broken family, like, he doesn't get to see his mom all that much, and he doesn't have a father.
I'm gonna step out for a quick second. I will be right back.
Okay. Do you want us to pause?
No, you're good. Keep going. I'll hear you.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so, He starts going over to the Murphy household more and just hanging out, right?
Yeah, he's just one of the Murphys.
Yes. And through this, like, his family friend...
Oh, his sister's...
Zoe, yes.
The one he has a crush on.
Zoe, because, the one
I mean, this
that,
is... I was kind of biting my tongue, but this is, like, the perfect time to swoop in, right? Because it's like, your brother was a great guy. Right. I loved your brother. I loved Connor. Right. Yeah, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's true.
Like, so, yeah. You do... Yeah. Yeah.
So I just got hungry. My stomach was gonna growl, so I just grabbed a snack.
Beautiful.
Get this. I didn't want it to be loud.
You're good.
You're so good.
Okay.
Yeah, honestly, it's like, ooh, like, cutie kind of sad, too. Like, ugh. But,
yeah, swoop in, be the
like,
hero.
It's like the one movie where they go to the funerals to pick up the girls.
What was that?
Like a Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
Some kind of thing, yeah.
No. Was it?
Yeah.
Kind of crusty, but
yeah,
it's a little.
It's really bad.
Kind of problematic, but go off, I guess. and so something that's really cool about this play is that, or musical, is that they show different ways of grieving. The mother is very much sad, and like he like wasn't the best son. He wasn't. He was pretty rebellious. He was pretty, like, withdrawn and, like, snarky. He had some dark things going on inside of him. But she's trying to hold on to any piece of him, of Connor, that she can find. The father is kind of more just, like, disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was never the son that he wanted. And so the father's...
Almost like he'll never be. No.
Yeah, and he'll never be. Yeah, because he's gone now. And then Zoe... her grief manifests more in this anger and this kind of resentment and just she's very much distraught at how she didn't understand why he did this, and also because of, like, the kind things that he said about her in his supposed suicide note, which is actually Evan's letter that he wrote to himself that Connor took. So it's just a sticky situation, right? Yeah, so basically, Evan becomes closer to the Murphy family, and they start almost treating him as a new son, a second son. And he does this by telling them fabricated stories about fun times he had with Connor, and showing them even fake emails from a fake email account.
Which you mentioned earlier.
Yes, which his family friend Jared, Evan's family friend Jared, helped him make the fake account and is part of this with him.
I listened to a bit of that. You showed me a bit of that song, and it was pretty entertaining. Like, they were having a good time.
Go listen to Sincerely Me. Yeah, it's definitely, it's pretty funny because you hear their words in Connor's voice, and so, like...
I like that.
It was cool.
Do they have Connor on the set?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yeah, so when they were doing the fake emails, and there's another part where Evan is kind of having a conversation with Connor, even though Connor's not there, just kind of, like, mentally in his own head, they have Connor come on the stage, and they kind of, like, yeah, they put, like, a spotlight on him, and it's pretty fascinating how they did it, because, like, you see Jared typing on the computer, but then you see, like, Connor singing the words.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's pretty clever, pretty well done. And he starts getting closer, and he starts worrying about people starting to forget about Connor as the grief starts passing. It's not trending news on Twitter anymore.
Yeah.
People aren't preaching about how wonderful Connor was and how much his loss has impacted their lives. And so as he starts fearing this, fading away.
If Connor fades, he does too.
If Connor fades away, then Evan does too.
Sure.
This has so much become linked with him.
Mm.
So, and you hear about this in the song Disappear. So Connor begins, Evan begins the Connor Project, which is a foundation dedicated to keeping the memory of Connor Murphy alive.
It's kind of weird. Kind of
pushing his luck a little bit.
Right?
So they take donations.
Yeah, they take donations. Whoa. Because they, so.
Wait, so what's it toward?
So.
Remembering.
Just remember him, you know?
Pay you to remember.
No, yeah, what they ultimately end up fundraising for is, like, a tree orchard.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. That's what I was wondering what they would use it for.
Yes, because one of the stories that Evan has told them is how him and Connor used to love going to the orchard together, and when Evan fell out and broke his arm, Connor was there to pick him up.
It was a pretty song.
It really is.
Yeah.
For Forever, or I think it's called For Forever. Just go listen to the whole soundtrack. And so he makes his foundation to keep Connor's memory alive, but also to keep his own memory alive, to keep himself relevant. And so this brings us to the end of Act 1. So with the opening of Act 2, they start the project for the orchard, and he's really trying to continue to keep Connor's memory alive. But Evan starts getting all of the lies that he's been telling starts catching up to him.
As they do.
As they do. As lies do. And so, as he's...
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Did they ever go into why Connor, like, any more into his background and why he committed suicide? Or is it just kind of a, okay.
Yeah, no, they don't really give much more detail.
Okay.
Other than that, he was a troubled teen.
Youth.
Yes.
It's kind of just taken. Mm-hmm. Evan's the star.
I see.
And I'm sure there were more details that I have forgotten since then that were elaborated upon during the musical itself.
No, but that, it makes sense.
Yeah. But they didn't go into super detail. And that was another thing that kind of concerned them. The only thing they found from Connor was the letter that he supposedly left to his best friend, which was signed Sincerely Me.
Right.
Title of the song. So, clever. Yeah, and that is a really sad letter. It's him saying, like, today is not a good day. Today is a bad day. Like, everything is terrible. I hate being, like, I hate life. This is Evan spilling out his feelings, right? And so they see this letter and they think that it's
right before reasons.
Yeah, for leaving. And so all these lies start catching up to him. People are asking for more proof about, like, why did Connor have a fake email account? What were other emails that were on this account? Like, can you elaborate the specific details of when certain events happened? And as they're trying to fundraise for this orchard, this other girl, I can't remember her name, but she is pushing really hard to get something good for her college resume.
Oof.
So she, like, jumps on the Connor project and is like, yes, I'm part of this. I'll be vice president. Let's go. She's like, we need something new and current for this story to get people's attention, to keep them thinking about Connor and get us the money that we need. So she's like, you know what's never been seen before? The suicide note. So let's get that shit out there. Let's post pictures of it online. Let's put transcripts on, like Twitter, Instagram, everything.
That's fun.
Yeah. And so when they do post it, it starts getting shared like crazy. It goes viral and the donations start rolling in.
But so his parents know that he's doing the letters to himself. Or his mom.
Exactly. Knows. Evan's mom knows that he's doing the letters to himself. And because she hasn't been so present. Yeah. Right. Because she hasn't really been present. She doesn't know that any of this is going on.
Wow.
He has kept her out of the loop.
Sure.
Along with her not being present. And so when she does finally see this, because it's become viral news, she connects it with Evan
and his
therapy assignment. And she's like, this is incorrect. So she confronts him and she is like, what are you doing? And they have this huge conflict, this huge falling out. And he tells her how with the Murphy family, he feels like a part of a family. Like, he feels like he has a mother and a father who cares about him.
Ouch.
And he's started dating Zoe at this point, so he's like, which is just kind of a weird dynamic if you think about it too hard.
Yeah.
But, like, he's found someone who relates to him, who accepts him for who he is or who she thinks he is.
He's in way deep.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah.
And so that's really upsetting for her because in her eyes, she's doing everything she can to provide for her son. She's doing the absolute best that she can. And what he's saying is that her best isn't good enough, that it's not enough for him. And there's this really angsty song where she's like, sorry that, like, I wasn't enough for you. Like, is this enough? Is this good enough for you now? Good for you. And with this, everything starts breaking down. Everyone starts to find out that Evan's friendship with Connor was a lie. And everything falls apart. And so Zoe is, like, really taken aback because the foundations of their relationship was him telling her the things that Connor would tell Evan. The kind things that
I'd be freaked out.
Connor would never say to her. Yeah, because he's telling her specific things that, like, he's noticed about her.
Ooh.
Like in the song. I mean, it's a cute song.
Sure.
like the way you, like, scribble stars on the cuffs of your jeans and, like...
It's kind of weird, though, if that's from her brother.
Yeah, it's all very weird if you think about it a lot. But it really just starts spiraling out and all this catches up to Evan. And so he goes back home and he has a conversation with his mom. And this goes to the song So Big, So Small, where she is apologizing to him and telling him how it felt when his father left them and how... she remembers him asking her, like, Mommy, is a car gonna come and take you away, too? And she's just saying, like, the house felt so big and I felt so small. And just expressing her feelings that she hasn't been enough for him and that, oh, this part, I was in tears at this part. She was like, I knew, like, I wasn't gonna be good enough, like, I am not good enough, and, like, I will not, like, or, like, I will not be enough for you. But, like, this is what I am. This is all that I have to offer you and give you. So, like, this is it.
Yeah, that's powerful.
And, yeah, like, I'm giving you the most that I can. And so, although Connor has really lost everyone else around this.
Evan?
Oh, God, I keep, sorry, I keep seeing Connor. Thank you.
No, we're going to get through this.
I'm so sorry. Yes, Evan, our main character, Evan Hansen, Evan, has lost
Quick
everything.
Question.
Yes.
I keep interrupting, but how exactly does it come out that it was fake? Does his mom tell everyone, or is it just kind of they were looking at the details and then it just was obvious that...
I think Evan ends up telling everyone. I don't remember exactly, and I didn't take notes on the ending.
That's fine.
But yes, I think he ends up telling the family.
That's kind of nice. That's some character development.
Definitely, yeah. And he, yeah. So.
Yes.
They were able to fundraise, and they did plant the orchard. Before all of this came out.
Okay.
So, they come back a year later, and Evan meets up with Zoe in the orchard, which has, like, these budding trees, kind of symbolizing new life and growth, and it gives us a window into what's been going on. Evan seems a lot more at peace throughout the entirety of this play. He's been very, like, you can feel the anxiety radiating from his body. Like, he's always uncertain. He stutters and he is unsure of himself. Like, his body movements, he's always very animated because he just has this anxiety inside of him.
Yeah, definitely.
And so when he meets with Zoe at the orchard, he's very calm and, like, put together. And he conveys how he decided to take the community college route because... community college is a lovely route.
It's the way to do.
Yeah, all like it shows it also like it's just it's a really hard system and he's coming from a family that they don't have much money for college.
It's a great way to do it.
Yeah, it's a wonderful path. And so it reveals that like he takes a community college path also because of his mental health. Like, he has too much to juggle. And he's also been working. He loves nature. And another important element of this that really got me as well, that kind of led to Evan facing the truth as well, was he finally faces how he actually broke his arm that summer. Because... throughout all of this, we're working on, he says, oh, like, I fell out of the tree, like, I just fell and broke my arm. But he very much likes nature, he likes climbing.
So he would know.
It doesn't make sense that he would just fall out of a tree. And so, he's having a conversation with Connor in his head, and Connor's like, did you fall or did you just let go? So, it's kind of implied that that was, like, a suicide attempt, or him letting go in some form. Him just not wanting to be there anymore. So when he faces that for himself, when he is honest with that and opens up to his mom, and that kind of opens the floodgates and shows that he can't run away from the things that he's been feeling and experiencing, and that it's okay to open up about them and to like face them. He meets up with Zoe and they catch up, and Zoe's in a similar place where she's in her senior year and facing similar issues, but we are able to get one last glimpse into Evan's life post all of this, and it ends there at the orchard. Yeah.
Do they kiss?
They do not.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'd rather them not.
Yeah, they leave on amicable terms.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good, considering everything.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Not like, oh, you pretended to be my brother's friend because he liked me. That's so cute.
And then we started dating.
And then I found out that it was all a lie. And you had a weird, creepy crush on me for, like, ever.
Oh, okay. So I had a thought. So during the whole time when he's... you know, creating this narrative that wasn't true. Did he have the cast on the whole time?
He had it on for a majority of the time, but then he gets it taken off.
So I was wondering if when he meets up with her later, if it was a symbolic thing that he wasn't wearing the cast anymore.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he's, like, let go of that whole thing. I don't know.
I don't recall. He, like, definitely has it off at that time, but I think that's a really cool comment and thing to think about, like, the symbolism of the cast. And how it also brands him in a way, because his name isn't going to wash off. Connor wrote his name on Evan's cast in Sharpie. Mm-hmm. So, like, he becomes permanently linked with Connor in that moment with that cast.
I can scribble it out.
But
you could try. When they, like, when I was watching the musical and he, like, just wrote it on there, I'm like, how many casts do they go through with the production of this thing?
Do they sell them? For, like,
they should.
Like they do with hockey jerseys and pucks. They're like, they were in the game. They were actually played with.
Authentic merchandise.
Sell it for $800.
You could just have, like, a plastic cast and then redo the bandages each time, right?
Oh, yeah.
And just write on the bandages.
That's probably the
move. That would be smart.
We got a genius over here. No big deal.
The ins and outs.
They actually took some of the original props, like, something, like, an iconic symbol of this musical is his like, polo shirt with the, like, blue and black stripes, like, and so, like, they make...
Like a bruise?
I guess.
I don't know. I'm trying to find something in everything.
Like when he fell. I just think he likes the color blue, which, it's sad. It's a great color. No, it's a great color. And they took some of the, like, original, like, that shirt and, like, some of the other pieces, and I think they sent it to the Smithsonian for an exhibit.
Oh.
Something
fancy.
Like
we need to go to the Smithsonian. That's
Where's
a trip.
The Smithsonian?
You've been?
Where is the Smithsonian?
It's over, like, in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I was going to say D.C.
Yes.
Okay.
Vaguely. That's as close of a location I can give you.
Seems right.
Yeah, because it's, well, like, the Natural History Museum.
Right.
The big dinosaur.
Is the Smithsonian the Natural History Museum?
I think it's quite large, and it has multiple components, and part of it, which is arguably most famous for.
The Smithsonian.
Is the Natural.
Oh, so the Smithsonian's the big, and then...
Don't quote me on any of this. I don't know.
I had no idea, though. I thought they were just separate. Got it.
Okay, as far as I know.
We can correct this.
But yes, I just wanted to real quick go over, like, the themes that are present.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Really tie this into the mental health aspect of this podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, it deals with themes of depression and suicide straight off the bat with Connor. And also, as we see later with Evan, like, with his possible attempted suicide attempt, with how he broke his arm in the summer, it addresses the social anxiety that Evan already feels but is amplified through social media, or maybe it was brought out because he lives in the social media age. I mean, I don't really know. It's not really clear. And also, what I like about this is that I feel it's a pretty relatable story because either you've been in this position, like, you know, being a teenager sucks.
Oh, yeah. So glad that's over.
Yeah. Just emotions, hormones, cute girls that you can't talk to. It's all there. It's all wrapped up. Or cute boys, whatever you're feeling.
And then,
with,
you already mentioned, the senior year, all that uncertainty in the future.
Stress about the future, college, if that's the path that you're taking, which is highly pressured in the society we live in.
Oh, yeah.
To go to college. That's not the only way.
I mean, you're getting your application responses. What's the word?
Like, letters.
Acceptance letters. There we go.
We hope acceptances.
Acceptance.
But yeah, definitely, either you've been through it or you're in a position where you're seeing someone that you love going through it, like his mother in this case. And so, it deals with all those themes, and it also deals with the grief of losing a loved one, losing a member of your community.
I really liked how they had different expressions just within the family.
Yes.
Because I think people can forget. And I think something I like to point out is when you have the stages of grief, they are not stages. They shouldn't be called stages because it implies that you go from one to the next and you don't go back. But it's very fluid. You can be angry, you can be in denial, and you can go through all of it multiple times and kind of bounce around. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah.
It's like the cycle.
Yeah. I mean, or, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, and you can bounce around as much as...
Yeah.
There's no one way to grieve.
Yeah.
And yes, that's what's especially refreshing about Zoe's character, how she is pissed. She is upset.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this one song, Requiem, where she says, like, I will sing no requiem tonight for you tonight, because she's so upset with him that she, like, doesn't want to, like, give him any acknowledgement, like, how dare you do this to me? How dare you do this to our family?
Right, and she's, like, the young one, so that's, like, it's totally...
Yeah, her big brother.
Everyone's,
exactly, and so everyone's also, like, focused on that. But yeah, it was really cool. And the father kind of dealing with, like, he wasn't the son that I wanted. So, those are all elements of it. The stress of getting into college. And then also, like, the social media presence and how that impacts our lives and its potential effects on... perhaps mental illness or enhancing or exacerbating feelings of anxiety and depression, regardless of if you're diagnosed with it, just overall feelings of that.
Yeah.
Because, like, you can feel anxious without having an anxiety disorder.
I always think it's really interesting, like, if you were able to show this play to people years ago before we had, like, cell phones... Just how much the advance in the technology and the networking has... It's changed the way everybody acts and operates so much. But it kind of opens up, like, that new kind of world to explore creatively. Mm-hmm. But it's just so interesting. Like, also just, I listen to all these, like pop songs and everything else too, talking about phones, and I'm just like, imagine someone someone whose only idea of a phone is like a rotary phone. Just if you went so far back that they didn't know what it was, they hadn't any idea, like, of what language it could be.
Yeah,
it's just it's interesting how it's just is almost like it's only, gosh, that's hard to say.
It's only decipherable in this time. Like,
you don't understand until you're in it.
Yeah, like, we truly are living in a new era, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah.
Because these things, technology, the iPad I'm looking at right now, the
what we're recording on.
Yeah, like, all everything. Of this.
And just how quickly.
Yeah, no, it's, I think
such
that's
a spike.
That's a crazy thing to think about. And, like, because of the immense, the quickness that this technology has advanced, we don't really know the ramifications of it.
Exactly.
We have some vague studies, and we're kind of like,
because it hasn't been around long enough.
It hasn't been around long enough to have thorough studies about the effects. And how can we even compare the effects if, like, we have...
This is the newest.
Yeah, we have 4-year-olds who already have cell phones. Like, I don't...
Exactly. Like, it's not even a control.
Yeah, like, there's no control.
Everyone
can't even find someone.
The control is someone who has a cell phone.
And
like,
the weird,
like, it's just,
the abnormal person would be someone who doesn't have
I just wanted to bring up Bo Burnham's Eighth Grade. We've all seen it, right?
Yes,
we saw it together.
Yes. I saw it,
and so they made a very good, I think, point of including social media when she's on her phone, and when she's posting her YouTube videos, she's much more confident than she is in person.
I mean, it shows, like, for better and for worse, I guess, in that instance, how it's just different than it used to be.
Definitely.
Being a teenager.
There's
the constants, and I think that's also kind of represented in the play, where you have, like, the classic kind of struggles, but again, like, it's a really distinct or gosh, what am I trying to say? Like it's not like a rehash or anything like that, right? Because so much has happened and changed technologically, culturally, along with that it needs to be redone, these kinds of like, you know, Breakfast Club kind of stories, because things are just different now.
Yeah, because like you said, the underlying themes remain the same, but the causes or the way that they're conveyed is rapidly changing.
Yeah.
Eighth Grade is, that was a really
That's a good movie.
It's really good, and it shows such a pivotal developmental period.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this, we're talking, like, with Dervin Hansen, it's, like, a senior in high school. Like, that's still a very important time, and there's a lot of change that comes with that, but, like, an eighth grader, like, she's, what, maybe, like, 13?
Yeah,
Like, much. You are, like, just starting to go through puberty.
You're a little baby girl. It's the hardest time. Such an ugly duckling thing. Everyone did. It's terrible. I just want to burn all the photos, or I guess delete.
You never had to get braces, though.
It's true. But I had that weird half tooth that I had to get covered, because it just got messed up. Grand Canyon trip. The very beginning of our Grand Canyon trip. It was terrible. Everything hurt. Couldn't
even enjoy the buffet.
I couldn't. It still makes me mad.
That's the worst part of puberty. Just losing part of your tooth. That's it.
I don't even know where it went. It was just on the floor of Circus. I was like, what is this?
Left a beautiful present for someone.
I hope they enjoyed it.
Me too.
I'm sure.
So I wrote down some notes just to bring up as you were talking.
For sure. Could I just wrap?
Yes, please.
I just
want
to wrap up my thoughts real quick.
Go for it.
Yeah, I just wanted to address that this has become quite critically acclaimed, but there are also the other side of people who have criticized it. People have their criticisms about it, and some of the criticizations that I've seen is that it romanticizes mental illness. It, according to this, because it doesn't actually name the diagnosis that Evan has, I said that it seems he has social anxiety, but they never give a clear diagnosis. And apparently this one says features of Asperger's syndrome. I don't know how much, whatever. Mm-hmm. And also, there's an argument that it glorifies suicide.
I hear that, I think 13 Reasons Why.
Well, it feels like more of a, I guess it really kind of wonders exactly, it kind of matters exactly the tone that they're using, but I think, regardless, it's kind of an accurate portrayal of how we do kind of idolize people who sometimes people who commit acts of violence, but also people who may just commit suicide, and they get the pedestal and they get all this attention and the people pouring out their feelings for this lost soul, that kind of, it almost encourages people or tells them, like, it validates the idea of doing something like that.
It does romanticize.
You're going to, it romanticizes it. You're going to get the attention if you do it that you right. want.
So it's almost like the play isn't, it's just showing how
it's
other
showcasing
people.
Showcasing the romanticization of in our culture.
I think that's kind of unfair to criticize it that way.
Yeah. I did want to address that because personally, like, I don't view it that way, but I would be, and like, I would be interested to hear about what other people think about it, or maybe what like a licensed therapist thinks about it. Like, if it is a good, like, does it address these issues in a good and healthy way? I would argue so, because it's normalizing these things, and these things that are quite prevalent in this time, and especially like in that age group. So many of my friends will just joke about, like, I want to die, I'm going to go kill myself.
Yeah.
Or, like, love anxiety. Like, that's part of our, like, everyday conversations and vocabulary. And if you sit back and think about it for a second, it's pretty concerning and sickening. That's just the way that
joke
we speak
about it.
Yeah. But yeah, that's.
Yeah.
Yes, Dervin Hansen. Go listen to the soundtrack. It's really good. Ben Platt did a fabulous job.
From what I heard, it was good.
Yes. He was also in Pitch Perfect, so shout out.
Okay. So I actually had a couple classmates from my year pass away before we graduated, and I think we were supposed to have 800 students exactly graduate, but then we had 798 because, mm-hmm. and it wasn't suicide as far as I know. I think one passed.
Car crash?
I don't think, maybe.
I remember flipping through your yearbook and there was like a dedication page, or you told me her story or something.
I think one of them died from like a severe asthma attack or something very, just like her body reacted. I don't know the full story, but it was very interesting to see, because they were, one, the guy who passed away wasn't, you know, quote unquote popular. He was kind of in the Asian nerdy group, which, I mean, to be fair, was a lot of my school, but he wasn't, you know, in the popular group. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people knew him, but it seemed like there was a lot of outpouring. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not trying to really call anyone out, because I kind of did the same thing too. I was like, he was in one of my classes and I kind of knew him. Mm-hmm. He
becomes this kind of like,
like a badge of honor, almost. Event.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. It's like a virtue signaling kind of thing.
Which is really weird. But, yeah, I mean, I can look back on my Facebook and I have posts that's like, oh, you know, you were taken too early. Mm-hmm. And I think I was trying to be aware of why I was doing it. But, yeah, it's kind of this, like, how much... I think in the end, it's your own intentions. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting to recognize someone who's passed. But, yeah, it's very much like, why are you doing it? And
definitely.
Yeah, yes. So.
Yeah.
And I haven't even thought about them in a long time. So that's very...
They do end up disappearing after that initial outcry. Yeah, there was a boy who took his own life when I was in my sophomore year. I didn't know him. He was a weird kid from what I heard. No one was really good friends with him. But everyone was pretty, like, shocked and taken aback when they heard about this loss.
Yeah.
They were pretty taken aback when they heard about this loss. And even I, who didn't know him, I felt so overwhelmingly sad to hear about this happening. Because, I don't know, I felt like I saw a piece of myself in that, but also I didn't even remember it until Fifi brought it up. One of my friends brought it up after we went to see Dear Evan Hansen, and she was like, look, like, even you forgot about him. And I was like, yeah, you're right, I remembered him for like those like couple of months, and I was like, oh, like, this is gonna stay with me forever, like, I'm never gonna let go of this, like, this is such a big deal. And like, life moves on, and for me, it, I don't know, it didn't leave a lasting impact.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it did, just not consciously.
Yeah, like, I don't consciously think about him.
I think I was talking about this the other day, that when you kind of make the big deal out of it, you're absolving yourself of that guilt of forgetting about it at some point. Because if it's going to pass, then, like, at least you paid your respect at the appropriate time. So I think there's a really kind of natural... maybe, like, healthy way to do that.
Yeah. It's just more of, like, the social media stuff, really.
Yeah. But then it's, like, people are posting about it and getting likes comments. Yeah.
Validating
that kind of stuff,
their grieving.
Then that gets very... That's a very nasty area.
Yeah. I wanted to bring up... I'm sorry. Are you good? I think our first episode I brought up Neon Gravestones. By 21 Pilots. It's such a great Trench is the album, and it's such a great album, and I would love to do just an episode on that. But I just wanted to point out, because this song really addresses that kind of fame that comes with committing suicide. And so I'll read a couple pieces from this song. I think, let's see, our culture can treat a loss like it's a win, and right before we turn on them, we give them the highest of praise and hang their banner from a ceiling. Communicating, further engraving an earlier grave is an optional way. He says no. And he
He says, I could give up and boost my reputation. I could go out with a bang. They would know my name. They would host and post a celebration. But at the very end, I really liked, let's see, this is kind of like the bridge. He says, promise me this. If I lose to myself, you won't mourn a day. You'll move on to someone else. And at the very end, he says, find your grandparents or someone of age. Pay some respects for the path that they paved. To life they were dedicated, now that should be celebrated. So it's a really thought-provoking song. So I just wanted to bring that up. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
In real time, so.
Definitely.
It's, you know, it's unfortunate it's how it happens. And it's, I mean, just like people doing it on social media for themselves, it's what the big, you know, the big six, big channels do just to get ratings on 5 o'clock news or whatever.
Yeah, this capitalization of tragedy, really prevalent in our time.
Yeah.
It's concerning. But yeah. Yeah, I think... gonna say something. Dan, I forgot my I just lost my train of thought. Like had a thought.
Like, it'll be back.
It'll come back. We'll see. If I just keep blabbering, maybe it'll just come
In the meantime, I still feel so bad about this that we forgot Karen from My Favorite Murder.
Love you, Karen.
I was listening so back and I was laughing because it was so bad.
Oh, God.
So, and I actually mispronounced her last name. So, just gonna correct myself. It's Kilgaroff. I think I said Kilgaroff. And I remember in an episode, she was like, yeah, that's what people pronounce and it's not right. And I feel so bad. So, okay, got that off my chest. I can feel a little better now.
And I remember what I was gonna say. So, win-win. Just, I think it is important to talk about these things. And when someone, and if you lose someone in your community, like if they have died by suicide, I think the really important thing to do with that grief and with those feelings of sadness and loss is to reach out and make your community a better place and make it a place where people can talk and open up and get help before they get to that point where you have to mourn their loss. Like, we should make it so that we aren't losing people, you know? So I think... that's like probably the biggest message I've gotten out of all of this is that it is so normal to feel these things.
Yes.
Everyone feels it and everyone thinks they're the only one feeling it or going through it. And you're not. You're just not.
It's actually called personal fable.
Ooh.
I had to learn that for my recent test in developmental. But yeah, if like posting on social media is the way you can kind of express that grief, I don't think we're trying to say don't do that. It's whatever way, if that helps you reach out, if you're feeling anything like this, and if that helps you, then all for it. Just know that someone is there to talk you through it. Yes. Someone... you know, even if you feel like no one will understand, someone out there does understand.
Definitely.
We should bring up the suicide hotline.
Yes, I pulled it up.
Perfect.
So I pulled up, I pulled up NAMI. NAMI. National Alliance on Mental Health. Love them. They're fantastic. And so you can find them. They have a helpline, 1-800-950-NAMI, or 1-800-950-6264. You can also go to their website, nami.org.
You can post it too.
Yes, we'll post. We'll have maybe things in the description.
Yes.
Or things like that. But definitely, there's just... You can always, like, message us too, I guess. You can cut that if... Maybe not.
I mean...
friends and family and anyone that you're comfortable going to. Obviously, the best resource you can get.
The people around you.
Definitely. And it's like, definitely a good idea.
Therapy is not a bad idea, y'all. I'll throw it out there.
I've learned a lot from 6-7 years of therapy, something like that. School is also a good resource. Not necessarily
for therapy, but they can direct you, hopefully, if they're good. But there's always something out there that you can use to, yeah, if you need to talk about this kind of stuff. So yeah. That's our...
You're not alone, and...
There are people there for you.
Yeah.
We love you.
We do. Love you. Thank you so much for sitting with us.
Thank you.
I love you for your views.
Validate us, please. Oh my goodness.
On Instagram and Facebook.
Yes. I guess we're just gonna do this. This is fine. Our Instagram, is brainsick.podcast. Our YouTube is Brainsick Podcast. I'm still not totally sure. And the Facebook page. Yeah, if you just search Brainsick, we should pop up.
Yeah, we'll be there.
And we'll start posting stuff on the social media. So we'll get it started. We'll get it rolling.
Check it out.
Go for it.
Okay, we good?
We're good. Thanks so much. Thanks.
We'll catch you next time.